The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The people on this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about, so please don't buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation, as it's just opinion. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 369. On the podcast today, Rob Proctor, CEO of Audio Boom. Now, I hold Audio Boom shares. If you listen to the podcast, you probably know that. I like audio. I think it will become on demand. I think it's the future. The podcast is the future. And Audio Boom are of the spoken word. But recently, Audio Boom came out with a trading statement saying their full year revenues will be below expectations. That dreaded phrase that shook the stock by about 30%. Really was, woof, you know, there were small caps being volatile. Wow. I didn't sell, I held. And, you know, so I've been waiting, and a lot of private investors as well, I've been waiting to hear what Rob's have to say about that. Because last time he was on the podcast, quite confident about the revenue being at 500,000 for the year. Doesn't seem a lot yet, but when you take into account H1, half one of the year, was 46,000. So the second half of the year, 10 times what the first half is going to be. Now, you know, it's good news. Pretty much, like I said in the trading update, this is delayed. It hasn't been cancelled in any way. This revenue will still come on. There's just been a bit of delay. And I talked to Rob about that and other things. And I think it's all good news. You know, if you can handle the volatility. And I do believe, I mean, I do invest for the long term. You know, I have gone down the market cap spectrum to smaller cap stocks in the last year or so. But I still invest for the longer term. You know, I invest in companies that I think will be big, you know, in a couple of years' time. And those kind of returns you can't get on bigger stocks. But you have to accept the volatility that comes with that on smaller cap stocks. And I still, you know, hold my opinion of Audio Boom because they are doing an aggressive land grab. And like I said, I'm on the platform. I like it. Anyway, that's coming up in a bit. Also, much requested, I've got an ex-market maker on the podcast. If you're not sure what market makers are, then Wayne Grossman will tell you all about it. He was a market maker for 18 years. He now doesn't do it. There's a lot of myth, you know, and controversy surrounding market makers. They provide liquidity to the market. So it's a two-way market. So if you want to buy or sell a stock, you know, you don't have to have a matching buy or sell with someone else. So, for example, if I want to sell my house, you know, I've got to find a buyer, you know, who wants that house. If you want to sell a share, you don't have to do that. You sell it, the market maker is the middleman. He'll take it on board and he'll sell it to somebody else when they want to buy it. And so they put the spread in there and all that stuff. Anyway, that's the way it works. And I'll talk more with Wayne on that and the myths surrounding market makers. Also on the podcast, today's stock with potential. I've changed this. Have you noticed a subtle change? It was penny stock with potential. But I'm not looking for stocks. Any stocks whatsoever that you think has potential, please go to sharepickers.com and click the link and fill in the form. And I will be recommending it at all. I'll be telling you to look at it, read it, and base your own research on that information already. It's a stepping stone. It's a starting. You know, some of the stocks on there, they may be rubbish, but people have taken the time to fill in the form. In fact, a lot of them are not. I've been reading through some of the fundamentals there, and they are quite good. But again, you have to start your own research there and do that. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation in the podcast, etc. Okay? And also, if you listen to the podcast, all right, and you listen on a regular basis, and you haven't given me a review on iTunes, I'm annoyed with you. Just click the link, please, at sharepickers.com. Give me a 5-star rating review on iTunes. I'll read it out and dedicate a podcast to you. Doesn't get better than that, surely, apart from Christmas. And joining me on the podcast right now, CEO of Audio Boom, ticker code BOOM. It's Rob Proctor. Hi, Rob.
Hello, Justin. How you doing?
I'm all right. Now, there's a lot of people saying, is this interview still happening? Ask him lots of questions. What's going on? So, first and foremost, Rob, let's address people who've not heard about Audio Boom. My podcast goes out on Audio Boom every day. But explain what it's about. What does Audio Boom do?
Yeah, so Audio Boom basically is it's a platform that we provide to content partners. We call them content partners, but broadcasters and publishers around the world. So the platform allows them to record, edit, upload, store, and then they can broadcast and syndicate that content digitally to their own websites, their mobile apps, to Twitter and to Facebook. And then our syndication team also syndicates that content, if it's pertinent, to, you know, thousands of other websites as well. So, I mean, that's predominantly our business. We obviously do have a consumer portion as well, but all of our focus has been for the last 4 or 5 months, and certainly for the next 18 months, is about growing the amount of content partners, the amount of content on the platform, and the amount we can syndicate that. Because when we syndicate content, we then have the pre and the post roll, and occasionally the mid-roll advertising opportunity, which is where we commercialize that content, and then we revenue share back with our content partners like Sky, Sky and Cumulus and various other people.
Okay, so the revenue comes from predominantly adverts, does it? Pre-post roll, the start and the end of these clips.
Yeah, I mean, that's the predominant driver. I think, you know, as we were looking through the mid part of 15 to the end of 15, I mean, we obviously put the number in the market at 500K. Our hope was, and certainly from the figures that came through from our content sales partners in the US, Cumulus, that was the number we were shooting from, predominantly from pre- and post-roll advertising, and a large chunk of that obviously being driven by Cumulus, because they've got a massive sales team in New York and throughout the US. As we saw some of the changes that happened in Cumulus through kind of October and what have you, we could see that revenue wasn't going to come quite as quickly. So effectively, I got on my bike personally and started selling some of that pre- and post-roll advertising, but also whole sponsorship packages in and around our mobile app and various other places. Now, our hope was that I would be able to go out and sell enough of that myself. We'd get it in early enough that we could deliver the media campaigns in a timely fashion, which would allow us to count that revenue in our 2015 numbers. As is often the way, especially in a fledgling media company, I mean, it can take a while to get those deals signed and in place. So we were hoping they'd come in, you know, through September and October, so we could deliver in October and November. Unfortunately, some of those deals slipped. So, you know, we signed media deals on the 28th and the 29th of November, and then the 2nd and 3rd of December, which we'd hoped would come in earlier. They didn't. And although we signed them within the 2015 calendar year, we've obviously got to deliver the advertising inventory. So, yeah, we can't deliver that in 3 days or 2 days. So, you know, those sales are effectively being delivered now and through January. Yes, we missed our 500K figure, but a lot of that 500 or the 300 that we missed by actually was signed, but it's being delivered into and through Q1. So, you know, I've just been speaking with our FD before I got on the call with you, and booked and paid for media. You know, our Q1 figure is going to be bigger than our whole of our 2015 figure combined. So, you know, we missed the number. Did we really miss the number? Yeah, I guess statistically we did. Have we since booked that, and are we delivering that number? Yes, absolutely we are.
Okay, so essentially they're not cancelled, they're basically delayed or postponed, is that right?
Yeah, we would not even postponed, was just delayed. Yeah. Like I say, we signed many of those deals either before the end of 2015, our financial year on the 30th of November, or within 2 or 3 days afterwards. But, you know, Hayes Mack, our auditors, who are here now getting all of our end of year stuff done, quite rightly said, you know, even though we signed it in 15, because we hadn't delivered the advertising as such, we couldn't count that number in 15 numbers. So we haven't. So we're delivering it in Q1.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go through some questions that some of the investors, private investors, submitted. Yeah. First one. Are you now going to buy shares yourself? Because after you mentioned this revenue drop in your trading update, the share price took a, you know, heck of a drop the last couple of days. And now, yep, it seems, I don't know if you think it's quite cheap, but are you personally going to buy some shares?
It's very cheap. I actually, and you know, Mike Preen, our company secretary, will attest to this. I asked Michael 3 days if it's possible for me to buy shares. But we're actually in a closed period because of when we're going to announce our end of year figures. You have to count 2 months back from that date. So I'm physically unable to buy shares. my intention was to absolutely, at these prices, I was going to come in and buy. But I have to wait until those year-end numbers are put in the market, which is going to be the back end of February, in order that I can do that. It would be illegal for me to buy stock right now.
Yeah, but otherwise you'd fill your boots. Is that right?
Mate, absolutely. Like I say, 4 days ago, I asked our company secretary if I was legally allowed to do it. And he came back and told me, unfortunately, I wasn't.
I mean, you know, this drop in the share price there, were you surprised by that drop, how big it was? Because I thought, wow, that is a big drop. I mean, you said that, you know, in your statement there, pretty much it's delayed these the revenues. It's not cancelled, but it was a heck of a reaction, wasn't it, on the share price?
It was a big reaction. To be honest, I wasn't surprised it went down. I mean, I'm surprised it went down as far as it had. But again, ultimately, we put the number in the market. We didn't hit that number. And, you know, for many investors and whatnot, they actually don't care at the reason, clearly. But in terms of, our long-term shape and everything that we said we put in place, the building blocks and the foundations for creating revenues, all of those fundamentals haven't changed. If anything, they've got stronger. You know, I think the changes at Cumulus ultimately are going to be good for us. The new CEO is utterly digitally focused. We are their digital platform for the next 3 years. We've got signed contracts to do that. I'm meeting with her in January for a big all afternoon session on the state of audio and the need to go digital. It's not a pitch for Audio Boom because we've got the contract. She's asked me to come and tell her what they need to do in order to help accelerate their business to be a digital company rather than pure linear broadcast company. So, no, we're in good shape. But yes, I was surprised it's gone down as far as it has. And as you say, at these levels, I made the inquiry to buy stock myself. In the last fundraising, I spent £50,000 and bought stock. And that was at 12.5p and 10.5p. So I am as despondent and unhappy as any other PI, because I'm a private investor in this company along with everybody else, to see it go where it has.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
You know, and I obviously held a lot of, warrants and options and everything else in the company. So my aims and objectives are very closely aligned to every other private investor in this company.
Excellent. Okay. Some of these questions you probably can't answer, but I'll ask them anyway. Otherwise, here's one. What are the revenue predictions or projections for 2015-16?
Well, let's just call it 2016. I mean, our year end is end of November. So a note came out from Arden the other day that pegged it at 2.5 million for next year. I think Paul at Arden does a studious job, always looks at that, obviously takes feedback from us as he's doing that. That's the number that's out there. And absolutely, as I've already said, our Q1 number looks like it's going to be well in advance of our whole 2015 revenue number. So, at this stage, I've got to say that, the number's out there. It's out there for a reason, and we're confident we're going to hit it.
Okay, so based on that, in the statement you intend to be profitable 2017.
Yep.
At the moment, what's cash burn about, 500k a month, pretty much, around about that
about
level?
About 400.
Yeah. So something's going to have to happen. Revenue's going to have to grow, or cash burn's going to come back, or a combination of both. What's going to happen there?
Well, it's certainly, like I say, we've got the number that's out in the marketplace with the cash in bank. And the revenues that we're projecting to bring in, we are set on the path that we're at. I'll only say this, and I don't know what I can say, but on the corporate broking side, we're making changes here at the company. I think you'll see an announcement out next Monday to that effect. And I think that that's certainly going to help us in our overall aims and objectives of the company.
Okay. And the Cumulus deal, I know last time you were on, you said about 25% of that has come, is embedded now. How far along are you on that?
I would say we're about 38% of what we think volume is going to be or could be. I have a call on Friday morning with the COO of Westwood One. A 2-hour call to discuss where we are and how we now re-accelerate, re-engage with the radio stations, and Westwood One, who do all of their nationally syndicated programs, to accelerate that. That's ahead of my meeting with the CEO of Cumulus stroke Westwood One later in January. There is an urgency on their side to, I think from all parties on their side, to accelerate this as quickly as possible, because it's in everybody's interest to do so.
Yeah, and are you sort of, your main focus now is sort of, you know, revenue and monetizing this?
Oh, absolutely. And that was our stated aim, you know, 4 or 5 months ago when we put out the interims previously, and obviously when I spoke to you last time. So we are, you know, we're utterly focused on that, and it's pre-post, and, you know, the sponsored in-red, host-red advertising is the absolute focus of everybody in this company. I mean, even through technical development at this point. So we, you know, you've seen some changes on the website. We have another raft of changes to come there. I think on the mobile apps, I think there's a couple more pushes, one before Christmas, one just after Christmas. At that point, we are very much on the tech dev side, kind of, I wouldn't say stopping, but putting a hold on our consumer technical development. So all of our tech dev team at that point, all of their focus is on developing the platform further to give us, you know, more granular analytics, to support the media sales efforts, to give us more functionality to be able to automatically insert more advertising and to insert, you know, kind of automated advertising into older podcasts. So we can put today's campaigns into podcasts that might be 6 months old, but they're evergreen content. So it's opening up a lot more inventory capabilities for us. But we need the technical capability to do that. So again, our tech dev team totally focused on the areas of the business that will lead to more monetization.
Okay. But I'm not, I know, if I go to the platform, for example, Audioboom, and listen to a couple of British sort of podcasts, like the big stations here, there's no you know, adverts on there anymore. Or there was for a while. I know my podcast had a video advert at the start.
Yep.
But now it's all gone. So what's happened to those?
Well, it's, we've, again, on the technical development side, so we are now working very, very closely with a global radio group, and moved some efforts away from the people at TalkSport that we were working with. So Global, through their DAX platform and their media sales team, but we've had to do some other technical integration into Global's back-end systems. That work is now reaching fruition. So again, from January 4th, that will all go, you know, live in full force. I think to augment that as well, we have a commercial director starting also in early January called Dominic Barker. Had 10 years at GCAP, been at Getty Images for the last couple of years. So Dominic's coming on full time to create that direct sales and commerciality effort within the company, but also working in partnership and managing the relationship with Global, with SCA, and with Cumulus in the US as well.
Okay, great. Next question. Rob, you've previously stated that no dilution below 12.5p. So, do you still stand by this remark?
Right now, I've absolutely no reason not to. You know, up from the answer from the previous question, you know, we are, you know, obviously with the revenues coming in and the burn we have at the moment, we are looking to hit profitability. We've still got millions of pounds in the bank. You know, the 12.5p figure was obviously what we raised at last time. And with people like Cumulus, we've issued warrants at that price. I stated then we wouldn't be issuing warrants below 12.5p. I've actually got no plans right now to issue any warrants whatsoever. So I can say absolutely yes to that question. But I mean, you know, who knows what's going to happen in the future? As I say, our representation is going to be changing over the next week or two. And obviously, the guys that we're going to be working with are very large players. They've got a lot of experience, especially at the higher end, at the FTSE 100 and 250 companies. So we'll obviously take advice from them as well. That's why you bring on advisors and brokers.
Yeah, yeah. So, because it's I mean, you can see the cash there, 3.1 million, I think it was. That's pretty much 6 months' worth. And obviously the revenues are slowly, you know, creeping up there. So it'll be a sort of fine line, won't it, between needing cash and, you know, and not.
Yeah, I mean, And but there's also areas within Burn that you can flex as well. So you know, across the piece, I think we've done a pretty decent job of managing cash against growth. You know, and you've always got to balance those two things up. You can obviously grow much faster if you spend more cash. But, you know, I think we've been pretty prudent with the cash that we've had. We've tried to grow in the right areas and do the right things. And I can't see that's going to change. You know, we'll keep running, you know, prudent financial management within the company.
Okay, next question. It appears that TalkSport, you mentioned TalkSport there, have now left Audioboom platform. Any reason why? Is that right?
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, ultimately the content they were putting up there was decent content. It was very, very short form content, so it was, you know, a minute or 30 seconds or 2 minutes might be, and that's fine. We can see within the overall on-demand podcasting world that, you know, longer form is just becoming more and more and more popular. We do have a remarkably strong relationship with Sky Sports, and we felt the relationship with TalkSport, and you know, TalkSport felt pretty much the same as us, was, you know, it wasn't serving either company in the right direction, let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. And certainly as we're looking to create more of our own bespoke content and work with podcasters like yourself and what have you, in many areas you would have seen on the platform that The Sun and News International have come on with some longer form sports podcasts that are doing huge listens, Spencer FC and whatnot. They're doing 30, 40, 50,000 listens an episode. And the content we were getting in from TalkSport, you know, wasn't that popular. Just it wasn't, you know, achieving the kind of numbers that we would have hoped for on our platform.
Okay, all right. So, and another question here. The number of active content partners appear to be decreasing. Is that correct?
No, it's the way we're counting. We're trying to be, again, we're held to a much higher accounting and transparency around our figures than any private company that operates in our space. So for somebody to be an active content partner, previously, as with most companies, you know, you'd have counted somebody if they were on the platform and they'd done something in the last 6 months, then, you know, they were an active content partner. And that's the way we would have calculated that a year or so ago. Now our active content partners have to be proactively posting content on a weekly basis for us to count them as an active content partner. So I would say our numbers are growing, and obviously they're growing because we're bringing on, you know, hundreds of cumulus channels on a monthly basis. So they're growing. We're just being far, far more circumspect and accurate in the way that we are judging what is an active content partner.
Okay. I know your figures are a record number for November. I think it's 33 million listeners or listens there. And was it 94, I think, of the quarter?
94 in the period, yeah. Yeah. We have our active run rate right now. We obviously monitor run rate on a rolling 30 days. You know, I would say we're probably trending by mid-January. We're going to be up and around the 40 million. And that's before we announce a very major content deal, which will probably get announced next Monday, along with our new representation. And before I can't really talk too much, but before we actively roll out what we're doing in India, where we have made some significant moves over the last 2 months, those moves will start filtering into our figures in January and February.
Okay, so it seems pretty much, you know, this delay on the revenues hit the share price majorly, but not a lot has changed. In fact, the company is getting better and improving and developing. It's just this delay really knocked the share price. Is that the case?
Yeah, no, absolutely, and I get it and I understand it. You know, it's really, you know, we put a number out there, we didn't hit the number. We have a reason we didn't hit the number. Do people care? Maybe some do, maybe some don't. But ultimately, we didn't hit the number. And obviously it's down to me and the other guys in the team here that, you know, we will actively demonstrate through our figures that we can post through Q1 exactly where those revenue numbers went at the back end of 2015. And I have no issue with saying that.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of you thinking, oh, maybe I shouldn't have been a bit optimistic. Maybe I should have been overly conservative, you know, because sometimes that pays off, doesn't it?
Oh, no, for sure. And to be honest, the figures we were working against were the figures that were given to us directly by Cumulus and Westwood One, directly from their sales teams, in terms of what they had in capacity of buys they already had on the books against inventory that they needed to flight. And I think, so we based our model and our assumptions on what we were being told by our media sales partner. Now, again, forward looking, and again, I'm not going to give the number because this is booked campaigns, but not paid for. So, but we know that Cumulus are now back on track.
Cool. All right. Marvellous. There's a couple of other questions. Two more, actually, Rob. Is the deal with the mobile handset still going ahead? That wasn't mentioned.
Yes, indeed. And again, they are the people that we're working with. It's not with a mobile handset. It's with an operating system company. And people can draw whatever the conclusion they like from that. And again, we are somewhat at the behest of their timing. So we're probably looking at January to see that roll out. We will probably see the upside, we hope, in the figures. But that obviously still requires people to click on something native, on their handset and actually engage with content. We think the volume that these guys have got means that volume is going to be significant, but we have to wait and see because you never know what people are going to do or not going to do. But we're obviously very optimistic and we're delighted with the partnership that we put together.
Yeah. And there's one more here. I think it's just a cheeky question. Fishing, really. Any more deals on the boil?
I think I've probably just talked about a lot of them. Yeah. I think you'll see a lot of activity from this company through January. We've known some changes were in pipeline here. We haven't put news out into the market because we wanted to make the changes we were going to make. That's all now coming to fruition. And obviously, we want signed contracts in place. We want firmness around all of that kind of stuff. But I guess the proof of the pudding is, if we weren't in closed period now, then I'd be buying stock. So I'm more than comfortable where we are as a trading company. I'm more than very uncomfortable with what's happened to the share price for our private investors, but also our institutions. And make no bones for me personally. I have a lot vested in this company. And although we're a traded stock, this feels like an owned and operated operation to me.
Okay.
I wear this company on my sleeve.
Marvel. Okay, well, give us the big sell. Three bullet points as to why someone now at this low share price should invest in the company. Three reasons to invest in Audioboom. What do you say?
All of our basics are spot on. Our KPIs are growing in the area they need to around listens because that gives us inventory. We have all of the right sales partnerships in place. We've got our own commercial director starting here. We've appointed one in India. We are currently interviewing in the US for those positions as well. We have bigger and better content partners coming onto the platform over the next 2 to 3 months. And we have all the right technology. So, all of the fundamentals are right in this business. Changing a mindset of a media planner buyer to move from buying linear broadcast for radio to buying on demand is challenging in this country. It's in place and is standard in the US. 80% of our total traffic as a company now comes out of the US, even though we've only been operating there for 11 months. So we're in great shape. And I think the share price doesn't reflect what we are as a company. I see new entrants into our space right now in the US who are startups raising between $5 and $10 million. At $40 to $50 million valuations, and they're startups, they have nothing.
Yeah.
We have the best content partners in the world. We've got technology, we've got distribution, and we've got monthly active users. Yeah, our share price is only $25 million. Mm. You tell me where the disconnect is right there.
Yeah, no, listen, I'm a believer. I hold stock in the company, and I also work in audio, and I understand that, you know, things are going on demand. That's the way they work. People listen to podcasts more and more, and I think, and I believe the long-term story here. So, I'm with you, Rob. I'm with you. So,
No, absolutely. Well, I'm actually going for drinks tonight with an awful lot of the PIs.
That's right, yeah.
So given the last couple of days, other people, I've started like, my God, what are you doing? I'm like, well, you know, it's easy to go and meet and socialise people when everything's good, the share price is rising. But, you know, equally, you've got to stand up and be counted and, you know, stand up for what you believe in. And I do believe in the company. So I'm looking forward to having a couple of glasses with the boys this evening.
Marvellous. Rob, speak soon, fella.
All right, mate. No worries. Catch you soon.
Okay, it's time for today's stock with potential, suggested by Ed. And Ed, I have to commend you and bow my head and say well done on the research you've done here so far. Like I said, please do your own research on this stock. But Ed suggested Active Energy, AEG. I was looking into this recently. I'm sure it was. Anyway, what does the company do? Currently, Ab supplies wood chips from Ukraine to Turkey. For making of MDF, and MDF's everywhere, isn't it, on these makeover shows. God, they're always using a bit of MDF. I didn't know what it meant originally, but is it multi... Anyway, answers on the postcard. Something for fibre. Would you say this is a short, medium or long term? Medium to long, with medium being a month or more. I see. How many shares does the company have in issue? 642 million. What's the current price and market cap? It's 5 pence or 28.26 million. What's the revenue and profit loss does the company generate? So H1 2015 at 12, just over $12 million revenue for 2014. 2 million loss due to various one-off factors and buying new equipment. How much cash does the company have? $890,000. List three reasons you think this company has potential. I got to say, Ed, you've gone overboard here. Really, when I say overboard, I mean, what I mean to say, it's gone the extra mile. It was the wrong phrase, that, wasn't it? Overboard. I mean, that's the wrong phrase. Ed, you've gone the extra mile, fella. I'm impressed. Three reasons. Okay, AEG has Richard Spinks as CEO. He's built up Lancome and from scratch and a few other companies. Very capable and good at PR and answers shareholders' emails. Has been buying shares in the company, even though he's shed loads of options. He owns 10.1 million shares, which is 1.75% of the company. Number two, has a growing revenue business in exporting wood chips from Ukraine to Turkey for making MDF. Recently bought new plant in the first stage in the group's long-term plan for a 400% increase in processing capacity. Has more orders than it currently can fill. And number three, blue sky opportunities in timber and power applications. In July 2014, AEG announced that it had entered into a major joint venture with Mitis Settlements of Pevin, Paddle Prairie, and East Prairie. I apologise for my speech here. I don't know if I'm saying the right thing. My pronunciations. I couldn't pronounce the word pronunciations there. Ironic. Which contain mature forestry and timber assets. On the 14th of September 2015, the group announced that it entered into a new joint venture, AE Coal Switch, with Biomass Energy Enhancements, LLC, inventors of a second-generation biomass coal replacement fuel technology. Also, a lot of interest in building smaller power stations in Ukraine fueled by timber waste, which would add value to AEG's current timber business and coal switch. So that's AEG. Ticket code, of course, AEG. Check him out. Please do your own research. And joining me on the podcast right now is Wayne Grossman from AcasPartners.co.uk. Did I say that right, Wayne?
We'd like to think of it as Arcas, but
Arcas.
Close enough, Justin.
Okay,
thank
so
you.
The reason why you're on, Wayne, is you were previously a market maker, and lots of people have said to me, get a market maker on. So you're not a market maker anymore. What do you do there at your company?
As Arcas Partners, we are trying to give people the tools to enable them to trade. We don't make any rash promises that we can guarantee that the people coming on our course will make money. But it never, perhaps unsurprisingly, never fails to surprise me that people don't actually understand how the market works.
Okay.
And we like to think we kind of give them an edge by giving them an insight on how the market works.
From
market makers, the RSPs, you know, there's a lot of unknowns for a lot of people out there.
So first and foremost, for people who've never heard of the term market maker, what does it mean? What do they do?
Market makers are there to add liquidity. In the old days, an exemption from stamp duty, which isn't really relevant anymore, the market makers were permitted to, they guaranteed to maintain a two-way price. So this was created in the days way before SETS, which, in case any of your listeners don't understand, SETS stands for Stock Exchange Electronic Trading System, which all the FTSE stocks trade on SETS. It's an order book, as opposed to the market makers who are part of the quote-driven system, which used to be known as SEAC.
Okay.
Then you have the hybrid system. So you have SETS, which is the bigger stocks. You have SETS MM, which is the hybrid system of the electronic system with market makers. And then you have SEAC, which tends to be, I think, perhaps most of your listeners trade SEAC stocks, which is AIM, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, and so market makers are there to offer liquidity, like you say. So they stand in the way there, so they make sure there's a trade going on. Is that right? So you can buy and sell, essentially.
Exactly. I mean, for a lot of stocks, I mean, especially not for a lot of stocks, for some of the very small stocks, there's only two market makers. So, you know, if you, as a buyer, waited for a seller without a market maker, you might have a long wait. So the market makers are purely there to add liquidity.
Okay, and so in order for them to, so let's be honest, let's say I want to trade a stock that's not traded very often, and I want to sort of sell it or buy it, you would take on that risk, wouldn't you? Is that the
absolute
case?
Absolutely, 100%, yep.
And so essentially then, if a stock was not traded that well, you would probably, to pay for the risk, you increase the spread. Is that right? So stocks
well, no,
not
I mean, the spread tends not to change. What will happen is if a market maker that doesn't have any orders on his book, so it's Acme Internet, and please tell me there is no Acme Internet, I'm using that as an example.
Yeah.
If a market maker's quoting, say, 102 to 104 in Acme Internet and buys what he feels is a reasonable amount from a non-institutional client. So, you know, this is a big difference here. The institutions pay a lot to the system via liquidity, via commission for research. So the investment banks, the market makers are beholden to the institutions to provide liquidity more than they are to the retail market. So an institution will always get better execution than a retail trader. But the market makers still have to provide retail execution,
okay,
which is the two-way price they maintain. So say that a market maker buys stock at 102 and he feels 2,000 shares is a reasonable amount. Mm-hmm. He'll probably just quote around that next and make 101, 103 or something.
Okay, so you just slice a bit off top then. Do you hold stock for a long time or what's the case? How does it work?
Well, I mean, as market makers have to. I mean, by virtue of what they do. I mean, that's why in an illiquid stock, prices move more than they should do, because once a market maker has, in this particular example, bought stock at 102, he doesn't really want to buy more stock at 102, so he'll change the price to 101 to 103. If he buys stock at 101, he'll just keep slamming them down until either he finds a buyer or he stops seeing sellers.
I see. And how many, you worked for a company, did you?
I worked for Deutsche Bank, I worked for Dresdner Clombach Benson and UBS Phillips and Drew.
Okay, and how many market makers are the companies, for example?
There's new ones cropping up all the time. In actual fact, I saw a mnemonic the other day, which I didn't even recognize. I had to ask someone who it was. I think there's probably 40 market makers, which is a guess.
Yeah, okay. And so essentially, the main way you make money is, I assume you don't want to hold stock for long. Is that the case?
Well, I mean, there is a cost to holding stock. I mean, market makers get charged finance charges for holding stock overnight. Okay. So, I mean, in illiquid AIM stocks, it's almost inconceivable that you could be flat. So it's just a matter of minimizing your finance charge.
Okay.
Unless, as a market maker, you think the stock's going up.
Yeah. And so ideal trade is what? What do you, what's the ideal thing you could have? You say this is a cracker.
in the previous example, you buy it at 102 and you sell it straight away at 104.
Okay, all right.
Which, to be honest, doesn't happen frequently.
Yeah. So exactly. So what is the markup? I mean, how does it work? How do you work that out?
The spread reflects competition. Unfortunately, there's the less market makers there are, the wider the spread is generally. The less liquidity there is, the wider the spread, because it reflects the risk. Because if there's no liquidity, the chance of a market maker buying stock and then finding a buyer for that stock obviously is reduced if the stock is less liquid.
Yeah. And so where do you tend to earn more money on? Which kind of stocks?
The stocks that trade.
Yeah, okay. So there's lots of myths about, you know, market makers.
Yes, people buy, yeah, I love these.
Yeah, people buy a stock and, you know, all of a sudden it goes down, or they own a stock and it's going down for no particular reason. And they always say, the market makers are messing around with this. They're, you know, pushing the price down. What are they doing? They're trying to manipulate the book, trying to get either, you know, buyers in or sellers or whatever. Does this manipulation happen a lot, or is it a myth?
And I really, really believe there is a misconception about this. There is no conspiracy theory. I mean, this is something which comes up on the course fairly frequently. Market makers, if you've got a stock with four or five market makers, they may talk to each other occasionally, but they are not in minute-by-minute contact. I mean, the FCA wouldn't allow it. Their compliance wouldn't allow it. That they would be sacked on the spot. So they might meet in a pub once a week, and I might say, oh, I bought some of this, but everything is very transparent. It's in the market, so that there is no conspiracy theory. What will happen is, and inevitably, I think you'll find it perhaps a result of Twitter or maybe the bulletin boards. Someone will say, I'm going to go and buy this stock. And the order gets split between four or five different brokers, and it ends up in four or five different market makers' hands, and it just looks like a wave of buying. So all of a sudden, the price goes up, and everyone starts complaining. It's the market makers. They're ramping the price up against me. I can't buy any.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's just the way the market works. It's not a conspiracy.
Yeah, yeah. And I've seen people saying that there are certain codes out there that happen, mythical codes amongst
the
market.
Yeah. And the market makers killed JFK.
Yeah. Well, not one of them is that if you see one share being bought or sold, that's a market maker, you know, code for an RNS coming out or something like that similar. Are there any codes at all?
None whatsoever, I promise you. Well, see, if there are, they've certainly come up in the last few years since I left market making. But in the 18 years I was a market maker, it never, ever happened.
So what's the explanation for one share? It can be a really small stock as well. One share.
I know. It's never failed to amaze me, some of these bizarre trades. I mean, part of it is the algorithmic trading and the high-frequency trading. I assume you know how the high-frequency traders work. Yeah. With the dark pools. I mean, it's perhaps slightly more in-depth subject than we need to cover here.
Can you give us a broad outline, as to how that works, I'd appreciate that.
Yeah, no, of course. Well, I mean, the high-frequency traders and the algorithmic traders, what they're constantly looking for this another marketplace called a dark pool. I mean, a dark pool is a collective term for Chi-X, BATS. These are electronic order routing systems. So not all the trades that you in a stock will go through the London Stock Exchange. Obviously, in an illiquid stock, it will never happen. But the bigger the stock, the more business happens away from the London Stock Exchange on these things called dark pools. So what the high-frequency traders do is they pay, certainly in America, for their order system to be routed nearer to the exchange. So they, as an order is put in, they see the order before it hits the market. They will then electronically try and see if there's a corresponding side to it in a dark pool.
Okay.
Which I don't know if that makes sense. It does to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, what's that? Is the book out recently, wasn't it? Flash the Boys.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, so it's worth reading that.
I think so. The other thing is a lot of orders are what's called VWAP based. VWAP stands for Volume Weighted Average Price.
Okay.
So certainly American clients tend to try and get a VWAP is effectively exactly as the price says. It's the average trading price for the day. So if you've got level two, if you look on your level two, you will see a VWAP for the day. And a lot of systems, electronic systems, actually will then decide that they need to trade. I don't know, it depends on the size of the order. They'll split the order into 75 different parcels and trade three parcels every 20 minutes or whatever. Wow. Just trying to get the VWAP.
Okay.
So a lot of very small trades happen because of the VWAP orders.
I see. So when someone says, you know, when they say, why do prices, you know, go down when I bought and go up when I sell, what's the answer there?
It's the market. It really isn't a conspiracy. It's just the way the market works. I mean, market makers, I mean, the simplest explanation is prices always move in the line of least resistance. So if all the bars have come in, the price, if there's nothing else going on, the price will go down. It's as simple as that, because there's no one left to buy it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, and thankfully, you put some questions for me to ask you. It says, why after a few days of a price decline, is there sometimes a big print and suddenly the price reverses?
Well, I mean, certainly the small caps, what will happen is there tends to be orders tend to be quite concentrated. If you have an institution, say, getting out of a stock, they'll dribble it out over, you know, with a lack of a corresponding buyer. They will dribble, i.e. they will sell the stock through one market maker, you know, whenever they can. They might sell 25,000 one day, 30,000 next day. And then the market maker will push the prices down, and sooner or later it will reach the price where there are buyers. Once that institution is taken out, and you'll see the volume pick up and there'll be a big print, which means the institution's finished selling and the price will just ramp up the next day.
Okay, cool. Right, what is backwardation?
Backwardation is when the price are moving fairly quickly. And it's almost, I hate to give any credence to the conspiracy theory, but it's almost a market maker's way of warning other market makers that there's something wrong with the price, because it's when the bid price is higher than the offer price.
Okay.
Obviously, no one market maker can do that, but on SEAC, the yellow strip turns red to display as a backwardation. It kind of alerts everyone that this either someone's done a bad trade, the market maker's pissed off, or the price is moving.
Okay, I see. All right.
So it's not really a conspiracy. It's more of a...
Yeah, yeah. So
a sulk more, kind of.
Yeah, so you're saying, it's basically you are driven by the market. You don't collude.
No,
miss.
100%. Exactly.
That's it. Okay, marvellous. Well, when do a lovely insight in, because for a while I've been trying to get a market maker on, and current market makers seem to not want to come on. And
I think you probably have to get some sort of voice changing system for that. Yeah.
Yeah. But thanks for coming on. And,
no, sure, Justin. Thank you. Thank you for giving me the chance to explain.
That's all right. I'll put the link to your website, which is, let me just forget the price, it's rcastpartners.co.uk.
Yep.
And I'll put the link to your Twitter here at sharepickers.com. So people
Fantastic.
Can click through and follow you and get some advice there. And
Brilliant.
Go and see your courses. Thanks, Wayne. Speak soon.
Okay. Thanks, Justin. Thanks.
That's it. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Much appreciated. And there'll be another podcast tomorrow. And if you haven't done so already, please, if you've got this far, click on the link at sharepickers.com and give me a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, and I'll dedicate the podcast to you. And also get involved. You know, a stock, any stock with potential. Click the link here at sharepickers.com, and I could be reading it out and spreading the word to the larger population. And listen, this is a very targeted podcast. Most of the people that listen... active investors, really active with deep pockets, you know. So please go to sharepickers.com and suggest a stock.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The people on this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about, so please don't buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation, as it's just opinion. Please do your own research.